Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're going to close the hour, the rest of the hour, with a question. And here it is. Where are the women? Our colleague at WXXI, Tiana Magnon, wrote a piece for City News in which she wrote about social pressures, family needs, and everything else that keeps women out of politics. And here are some statistics that Tiana brought to us through her piece. First of all, in the House of Representatives, the U.S. House, women make up 19% of the seats. In the U.S. Senate, 21 out of 100 senators are women. Women of color are even further behind in terms of representation. There's, of course, 535 total members of Congress. Just 7% are women of color. Only one governor in the country is a woman of color. That's Susana Martinez, the Republican governor of New Mexico. A woman has never served as governor of New York State. 14 of the 63 members of the state Senate and only 45 of 150 in the assembly are women. Now, compared with other nations, the United States ranks 101st in female representation in public office, behind nations including China, Afghanistan, many others. And a couple decades ago, we were right sort of, I would say in the middle, it's not the middle, but 52nd. Now we're 101st. So just a lot to take stock of when it comes to numbers. What we know is in elected office, women are just not represented like men are. And our guests in studio have a number of perspectives to share with us on these issues. So let me go ahead and welcome them. In studio is Tanya Conley, a Monroe County legislator since January of 2016, a Republican from Parenton and East Rochester. Tanya, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Evan.
Also here is Jamie Romeo, Chair of the Monroe County Democratic Committee. Jamie, welcome back to the program.
I'm glad to be here.
Nicole Husher-Ray is here, and Nicole is an Irondequoit Town Board member and the statewide executive director of Women Elect, which is, by the way, what? Nicole, tell us what Women Elect is.
It is a long-term leadership development program for women considering running for office in typically 2 to 10 years. One of the few long-term programs in the country. So not a boot camp. We focus on everything from how to interact with the media, equipping your family for your run, and kind of creating your story of self, which is really the basis of every political campaign.
And on the line with us is Diana Chihok, who is a board president and co-founder of Women Elect. So welcome, Diana. Thanks for taking the time for us as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
I want to go around the panel and just start with the numbers and ask, should we be looking for a numerical representation that is even? Or, well, let me just do it this way. I'm just going to go ahead and read an email I got this morning when we were teasing this program, and it comes from a listener named Sarah. She says, I'm sorry, Evan, but your panel is part of the feminist wave that wants perfectly equal numbers in all corners of American life. 50 men for 50 women, in every workplace, in every government office. Well, I'm a woman who believes that until men can bear children, there will always be significantly more men in politics, and that's just fine. In fact, it's natural. Why would we go against nature? That is from Sarah. So I'm going
to start. That's a way to start.
I'm going to start with Tanya. We'll go around and just response to that email and thoughts about what we do see in terms of the numbers of women in politics.
Well, Evan, I'd like to start with Monroe County because that's what I'm more familiar with. And I would say that in Monroe County, our voters are very comfortable supporting women in leadership. If you look at Cheryl Donolfo, Maggie Brooks, Sandra Dorley, all countywide elected administrators of, executive positions. Our county court and Supreme Court judges, we have 8 judges who are elected either by Monroe County or even a larger number in the 7th Judicial District, which is larger than Rhode Island. And so Monroe County voters, by and large, are very supportive of women in leadership roles. I don't believe that because you're a woman, you're going to vote a certain way. And I think that might be what Sarah's getting at, that just because there's a woman candidate doesn't necessarily mean that other women are going to support that candidate. I think that when you're running for office, you're taking a position on large numbers of issues depending on the office that you're running for. And so people are more likely to vote for someone who identifies with the community values that are supported in that community. Mm-hmm. And so I don't necessarily think that we need to be focusing on the gender of a candidate. I think we need to be focusing on the competency of a candidate.
Okay. Nicole Husher-Ray, what do you make of Sarah's email?
I took that as traditionally women are typically the raising the family, the home caretakers. However, I would challenge Sarah to look at other industries or other lines of work where women are CEOs or entrepreneurs. And many of which have families, are working full-time and you know, stretched very thin, as most of us are these days. But I don't think it's about the lesser or the better candidate. I think it's just about equal representation. I mean, women make up over half the population, so we should have over half the representation, quite frankly.
Okay. Jamie Romeo.
I think one of the other focuses, especially when we look at representation, we have to concentrate on is the policies that are being discussed and ultimately the decisions that are happening. I mean, we live in New York State, which is a fairly progressive state, a Democratic state, and we have had trouble passing things like the Women's Equality Act and a number of other women, I don't want to call them women issues because I know we're trying not to do that. They're family issues, but some policies that really are effective to women's health and other things that directly affect women, we don't seem to be able to make much progress on. And part of that is because we need to make sure we're adding our voices into the rooms of the decision makers, which are those lawmakers. And that's more when we look at especially federal and statewide levels, not just New York State, but across all the different states. But I think that that would be definitely my counter of why we do need to increase that number. I think the number is definitely too low. But in order to make sure we have that voice in the room, we have to have a significant voice, which means numbers.
Let me turn to Diana on the line with us. And Vox.com wrote a piece about the lack of women in Congress. So let me just quote from Vox, Diana. They say that today fewer than 1 in 5 voting members of Congress are women. And surveys have shown that potential female candidates, we're talking about recruiting people to run for office, potential female candidates are also 15 times more likely than men to be responsible for the majority of childcare and 6 times more likely to manage most housework. So, Diana, there's been a lot of talk about sort of a more even strength look at households and household duties and opportunity. But I think what Vox is pointing out is that surveys show that those gender roles haven't moved as much as some people might think, and that may be impacting the number of women in politics. What do you think?
Well, so Evan, I want to answer the first question first.
Yeah.
Because I have an additional answer. I don't think it's all about the numbers. I think it's proven in the way women govern differently and why it's important to have an equal number of women in our elected bodies. The 2013 government shutdown is the perfect example of this. The women in the Senate, both Republicans and Democrats, would weekly, I think it was, or maybe it was monthly, get together for potlucks. I believe they still do. So they knew each other. They had relationships. They knew each other's families and what their goals were in Congress. And so when the government shut down in 2013, and there were veterans not getting their checks, there were Social Security seniors not receiving their checks and people on disability, there were tons of federal families not receiving a paycheck because they weren't essential employees. And they knew that was directly affecting the families in their districts. And so they reached across the aisle, used the relationships they had, and are credited with starting the government again. Women govern differently, so it's not just a numbers game. But also, like you said, women have bigger challenges in running for office. Yes, often women have a majority of the child care responsibilities. I have a friend in Maine who just put a Facebook post up yesterday saying she's being recruited to run for the Maine State Senate. She's a single parent, and her son is starting high school, and she doesn't want to move him with her to be able to be a full-time senator there. And so she's saying, what do I do? How do I work this out? And the whole Facebook post, the whole thread, was other families, other friends stepping in and saying, he can come stay at our house for a few days a week, or you could do this. And there were lots of options. We have to be creative. We have to support each other in this endeavor, but we have to get more women in elected office because women govern differently.
But let me just follow up and ask you, you know, the implication when you say women govern differently, and maybe I am wrong to infer this from what you're saying, is that women are more interested in issues that we might typically identify as progressive or left-leaning. And I think, you know, maybe people like Tanya and others would say that, you know, you can't just make a blanket statement that women govern differently or govern in a certain direction. Am I misinterpreting, Diana?
Yeah, I did not say, I wasn't talking about policy. I was talking about the way that women approach governing, the way they are more driven to build relationships across the aisle and have those discussions. They're more driven to the outcomes instead of a political win. I mean, that's not to say that women aren't political, but many times the governing, the act of creating those relationships, making those compromises to move forward with legislation, introducing legislation that is going to have a greater impact on their community, often is better done by women. Women have different skill sets than men. And so if we have a balance, a gender balance in office, then we're going to have the strength of that in our governing bodies, both the attitudes of men and women when it comes towards governing.
Tanya, do you agree with that?
You know, I don't, for a couple of reasons. I'm an attorney in my day job, and attorneys tend to be, by and large, it tends to be a very male-dominated workforce. I think in Tiana's article, she pointed to a statistic that said about 30% of practicing attorneys are women. And so I have learned since I graduated from law school that the art of persuasion is less about gender and less about your style. And it is more about being competent, knowing the facts and knowing the law. And I apply that to representation in the county legislature. You know, when you look at women in leadership roles in the county legislature, there are 9 committees. 5 of them are chaired by women. So the majority of chairmen in the legislature are women. Debbie Draw is our Ways and Means chairman, the most powerful chairman position in the entire legislature. And so I don't necessarily think that women govern differently. I think that successful women and women who get elected are people who understand the issues that are confronting the people that they represent and are trying to do a good job of either solving those issues or continuing to govern in a way that allows people to create what they want for their own families.
Tanya, you're bringing a bit of a different perspective to this conversation than the rest of our guests here. And so let me just follow up with this. You know, you're in a field, attorneys are roughly 30% women, is that right? And Tiana's piece pointed that out, right?
I think it was like between 30 and 35% of practicing attorneys are women.
Okay. And when it comes to politics, obviously we're looking at many levels here. You're pointing to the county, Monroe County, where we see a lot of female women representation in leadership, the executive levels, also serving throughout the legislature, but not certainly not in most and many other states, state legislatures, Congress. And I think of someone like James Damore from Google, the engineer who lost his job, who wrote that memo that said, look, when we obsess with getting equality, let's say engineers, women in tech, we're missing, Damore claimed, we're missing the point that these biological differences exist and that may lead to a natural split in the numbers in certain fields. Not 1-to-1 and maybe not 10-to-1, but maybe 2-to-1, 3-to-1 in certain fields. That's part of what Damore was arguing. And a lot of people were bothered by that. They thought the science was faulty. Do you think there was a point there?
Well, I have to be honest, I didn't read the article that you're referencing.
Okay.
But what I do think is that there are different levels of engagement. And do we really want to encourage people to run who don't want to run? Do we want to encourage people to run who are the people who actually are going out and going after it? And maybe people who are taking training from Nicole, who are signing up for 2 to 10 years from now, I want to be in elected office. I think those are the people that we should really be looking at. I don't think that, you know, the political system should be reaching out and trying to interest people who have to be sort of pulled along, because being in elected office is a lot of work. It's a lot of fun, but it's a lot of work. It requires a lot of evening and weekend hours, and you have to be really motivated to do it. And, you know, with regards to family issues, I'm not going to deny that it is difficult if you have young children to be in elected office. It is absolutely difficult. But that's true for either a man or a woman. It depends on the family structure that you have around you. And so, you know, I have a rock star of a husband, and I'm so blessed. And actually, when we first fell in love and started talking about getting married, it was something that we talked about. And I told him that it was something that I was interested in, and that when the time came, you know, he was going to be called upon to do a lot. And he was very supportive of that. And so it's a long-term approach. And it's knowing that it's something that you want and going after it. And then surrounding yourself with the right people, you know, in your family, in your professional contacts, and in the wheelhouse of people that you can ask for money.
One of Jamie Romeo's jobs is to recruit people to run for office, right? Is that fair?
Yes, that's very
okay.
fair.
Okay, all right. So in Tiana Mignon's piece, she did point out something that I think is important here. Quoting from Tiana's piece, she writes, in fact, some studies say that when women run for office, they're about as likely as men to win. The problem, researchers say, seems to be that women simply aren't running in the first place. That is an important distinction. And that brings me back to the conversation we had about a constitutional convention. And Jesse Lenny from the Working Families Party you know, he's pushing for a no vote because what he says is you don't want to try to recruit people to be delegates to a constitutional convention when he says it's hard enough to get people to run for office because of the advantages of incumbency, the difficulty on any candidate. Mm-hmm. Now, when we look at what that might mean for women, again, I don't want to overgeneralize, but I want to get your perspective when it comes to recruiting candidates. What have you found? How do you approach that? What do you hear from people who you think, boy, you would be wonderful and, you know, at this position or for this candidacy if we can get you to do it?
Well, I think it's almost important when you're doing recruitment just to think of it in this perspective of people that just witness politics, and everyone assumes the worst of politics, that it's dirty, it's mudslinging, it's awful. So you're asking somebody, in addition to your full-time job, your kids, your family, everything else, I want you to jump feet first into that quagmire. And, of course, if you're not selling that opportunity really as an opportunity, most people's instinct would be, why would I take on all these additional burdens to enter into a fray that I know is going to cause me more stress and chaos in my own life? But I think last year's election, definitely the presidential election last year, I think has renewed this conversation with a lot of individuals and people in general. This year, particularly in Monroe County, we have a number of first-time candidates, both genders, but also in many different levels of office, from town, village justices, town board supervisors. But we had a lot of people that I think are starting to take that perspective of, I want to get involved and I would like my voice to be added to the room, or I want to represent my friends and neighbors. And the problem is that for many people, particularly with women, they don't know where to go first or who to ask first. And that's why I think supporting programs like Women Elect in these other, some boot camps, but some of the other long-term programs, we need to start creating more of these opportunities to start that conversation. I know I've been having conversations with people that are looking a few years out with different offices that they may or may not be interested in. But I think that it definitely can be a challenge in starting to have some of these conversations, because you do hear the most common thing I've heard hasn't necessarily been children or family obligations or other things. It's been politics can be so negative and so nasty, and why would I want to enter that? And that's when you have to try to deliver that opportunity of, if we don't start entering that fray, we'll never be able to have any kind of change.
Well, Nicole told Tiana Magnon, politics is not sexy. And that is a, you know, for starters. I mean, it can be exactly what Jamie's describing, a lot of hard work. I mean, Tanya says it can be fun, but it's also a lot of hours if you want to win. And so let me ask you, Nicole, and I want to get Diana's thoughts on this as well, and then we'll take some phone calls. Nicole, why do you think we've gone backwards in women representation in public office? According to that City News piece, the U.S. 101st in women representation in public office, behind China and many other countries. 2 decades ago, we were 52nd. Why do you think in the last 2 decades we've gone in that direction?
I think it's a number of reasons, of course, but the process itself is becoming more or less approachable, unfortunately. Just as Jamie was saying, in terms of the negative politicking, right? I wouldn't say it's necessarily at an all-time high. I couldn't say that outright, but it certainly is not what it was 30, 40 years ago. And, you know, our responsibilities aren't shrinking, right? Having the internet, computers, checking email by phone all the time, and we're constantly being dragged in 10 different directions, regardless of what the family situation is at home. And there isn't an underlying focus of encouraging women to run. I would say that, you know, that is a huge part of why women don't run. I've been working in politics for over a decade, and when I was approached to run for town board, my knee-jerk reaction was, why the hell are you asking me this? I'm not qualified to do this. And then, you know, I realized that was my knee-jerk response. And so many of the women I talk to who are getting involved in the Women Elect program, they genuinely need that encouragement. And there is a national statistic that says, on average, women need to be asked 7 to 8 times before they'll even consider it.
Yeah, the Vox piece on Congress found surveys indicating that men tend to be 10 to 20 points higher in terms of rating their own qualification and their own confidence to hold office.
It's a big part of what we focus on in the program. We have to be able to be our own biggest advocate, because why should anyone on the campaign trail do that for us if we aren't doing that properly ourselves? So, you know, a lot of time is, and Diana can go into this a little bit as well, but a lot of time is spent on becoming okay with saying, I am the expert of this. I am, you know, my expertise is this. I am really good at this. Women, we don't tend to speak of ourselves the same way that men do. And we require that community support, I think, to take the plunge, because, as you said, it's not sexy. It needs to be something that we feel called to doing to better the lives of our family and the communities.
All right, let me grab Diana's thoughts on that, and then we're going to get to your phone calls. Diana, thoughts? Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's the whole reason we founded the program, and so why it is meant to be taken long before you run for office, because the very first thing that a woman needs to understand in order to be successful when she runs is that she does have the ability and the talent to be able to be a leader in her community. And so, you know, the women that take the Women Elect program are generally very involved in their communities already. They're already doing the work that, you know, a person in public office does. They're going out, they're bringing coalitions of people together, they're working on an issue that's important to them, they're focused on making life better in their community. And this is a way that they can provide that for a larger number of people in their community. And so they have to believe in themselves, and they have to believe that they have the ability. But most women, when you ask them the first time, you should run for office, when you see them doing these good works, you say, you should run for office, and they will say, oh no, I can't. And then they'll list off a number of reasons. And some of them may be logistics of family and work and balance that they need to think about long before they decide to run. But most of it is confidence, and most of it is being able to say, you know what, I can do this. I am qualified to serve my community. I do have good ideas. I have a way to bring the community together and bring the right people to the table to get problems solved. And so, you know, this is across the board. This isn't just in politics. This is also in the corporate world. This is even in the university world, women in leadership. That's where it starts, where the problems, the disparity starts, that women don't step up. And so this is something that I think women are facing right now and coming to grips with across all industries. And we just need to make sure that we are helping those women that would be great public servants and want to run for office and want to serve their communities have the skill set to be able to do that.
All right, let's get some phone calls. Robert in Fairport first up. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I think the danger in this sort of a mentality, it sounds almost like a quota mentality, is that you can elect people to office that really are unqualified, they're unsuitable, and they're unfit. We have a local example. I mean, look at Letitia Astacio. I mean, this is a person that probably never should have been elected to office in the first place. And I think that each candidate should be evaluated on their own merits, not their gender, not their ethnicity, so on.
Robert, thanks for the phone call. Let me start with Nicole, because you're the one you mentioned earlier, you know, 51% of our community is women, therefore you think it'd be good to see 51% representation in political office being women. Thoughts on that?
Well, and let me clarify.
Yeah.
It's not a quota, right? At the end of the day, of course, we would like to see a gender equality in public office. But it's about packing the electoral pipeline with qualified women. That's what we focus on doing with Women Elect. It's not just a numbers game. We're not going on the street and just, oh, this woman has the time to do it. She's got a pretty face. Let's throw her in. It's as Diana was saying, it's women who have been active in the communities, already advocating on the issues they care about, and quite frankly should run, because they're already good leaders. So, yes, I would be thrilled to achieve equality in public office, but it's not, at the end of the day, it's, as Diana was saying, it's about having that other side of the coin in terms of leadership styles. And there's a lot of qualified leaders out there who just aren't inspired to run just yet.
Yeah, I would just say, as the guy on this discussion, Robert, I understand the point that you're making about, you know, you don't want to just run people to fill boxes if they're not qualified. In this case, we got a lot more men in politics than women. You may be able to find a few men not that qualified for the job. Say, you might actually find a few. Tanya, what do you think about what Robert had to say there?
I think he's reiterating the point that I made earlier, which is that each candidate for each office should be judged on their competency, not their gender.
Okay. What do you think, Diana?
Oh, I absolutely agree. But the problem is not enough women who are qualified step up to run for office. And if we can change that equation, then we will achieve equality, because there are plenty of women who are very qualified to serve in office. And if they can step up and run and have a viable plan for a win path, then we'll see that equality in office.
Okay. Jamie, some thoughts before I grab another phone call?
Actually, I think everyone here is kind of hitting on. I'm not sure if there's really anything else I need to reiterate of all that.
Let's grab Jane in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Jane.
I just hear a different level of judging men and women here. I think back nationally, it was well said about George Bush, 43, that he was incompetent. He knew nothing about government. He really didn't do well in business. He was asleep at the wheel a lot. We used to joke about who's president, Cheney or Bush. I could go on, Reagan, mentally ill, and they knew it when he went into office. He still goes in for two terms. George Bush, two terms. And now we've got Donald Trump. It seems like when we look at men, we forgive a lot. We don't get out the microscope and look at him as we do with her. It's like we are looking for reasons that she shouldn't serve. And the men, we just overlook so much. And I would even go back to Clinton. He was a known womanizer. I didn't know that when I voted for him. I thought, well, it's one time. But he's a serial. I wouldn't want that kind of a person as a president. He's got more important things to do. So we look at this differently. I would like to hear men talk about, well, we can't have men in because, you know, they tend to get in and not help the country. They tend to help themselves. And they do womanize, and there is a lot of corruption, so we can't have all these men in. Only women will get in and take women apart. Thank you.
Jane, thank you. I mean, there's enough John Edwards out there that we don't need more. I don't disagree with you there, Jane. And I think we're at an interesting moment here. I wonder if the Weinstein stuff has broken the dam on a lot of kind of stuff that was bundled up for a while. Because, we're seeing a lot more from Kevin Spacey to probably many more to come. And that may be a good thing. Maybe that's how you weed out some of the people who shouldn't be in prominent positions to begin with. But, Tanya, do you agree or disagree? Jane is saying that men aren't scrutinized in the same way, that men are given a pass more often in politics. Yes or no?
I just don't agree with that. I think that there are people in other parts of the – so on a national level, there are people in other parts of the country that may view – the national agenda differently than the people who live in New York. And so we have surrounded ourselves with in New York, we do tend to be a very blue state. Monroe County, I think, tends to be more equal. We have a lot more county elected officials who are Republicans in countywide offices. But, you know, just because somebody disagrees with the policies of the president doesn't necessarily mean that they're incompetent. And I'm not expressing that anybody is incompetent based on their gender. I'm saying that competency and gender are not necessarily related.
But when you say you don't think women are scrutinized differently than men or unfairly in politics, Congresswoman Slaughter in Tiana Mignon's piece said that she remembered when she first ran for office, people would say, what's going to happen to your children? What's going to happen to your children? In a way that she's almost never heard men asked that question. Do you disagree with that framework?
I got asked that question as well by people at the door.
Because men really don't get asked that.
But I think it's a fair question because the narrative in the media is women have so much more childcare responsibilities. So I think people are predisposed to believe that we have to do so much more. And so I think it's a fair question if people are saying, are you going to have time to represent me and make sure that you can answer my phone calls and make sure that you go out and investigate a dangerous intersection that needs a traffic light? Are you going to have the time to do that? Because I think people want their elected officials to be responsive. So I think it's a fair question.
Okay.
I think it's a fair question. Are you going to have time to represent me is a fair question.
But should we be asking men the same question? Yes.
I would have no problem asking it. So if somebody had young children and came to my door,
sure,
and wanted to run, I would ask them, what's your family structure? Do you have support at home? You know, are you going to be able to do this?
Okay. Nicole?
I agree. Men should be asked that as well, but they're not. I mean, I commend you for actually asking all of those questions thoroughly, regardless of the sex of the candidate. However, this is the norm is for women to be asked. I mean, the day I got married, people started asking me when I was going to procreate. Right? That's just how it is. Nobody asks my husband that. It's me. That's just how it is. And just because something has been done a certain way, what's the phrase? the most dangerous phrase in the human language is, this is how we've always done things, right? You're kind of half on the line. It seems like you're saying, yes, this should be a men and women issue in terms of family and childcare, but it's just not. So I think it's a matter of recognizing that and kind of having that dialogue to change that.
We're down to our last minute, and I just want to ask Diana Chihak, who's board president and co-founder of Women Elect, where you want people to go to learn more about this. I know one of your goals is to get women to think more actively about long-term, about their prospects and their qualifications to do this. Where would you send them, Diana?
Well, to our website, womenelect.org. And we have programs now running in Buffalo, Rochester, Auburn, Syracuse, Corning/Elmira area, and Albany. And so if you live in any of those areas, you can apply to enter the program right away. And we have many other areas of the state that we're looking to expand into. So Rochester has done a phenomenal job. There's actually two classes happening simultaneously in Rochester because the demand is so great. So go to womenelect.org and apply now.
Diana, thanks for taking the time for the program today.
Thank you.
The piece that Tiana Mignon wrote it for City News. You can find it. We'll post it for you. Where Are the Women? Social pressures, family needs, and lots more still keep women out of politics. But a diversity of opinions today. And our thanks to Diana Chihak and Nicole Hushleray, who's an Irondequoit Town Board member and statewide executive director of Women Elect. Thank you, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
Tanya Conley from the Monroe County Legislature. Thank you, Tanya.
Pleasure to be here.
And Jamie Romeo, Chair the Monroe County Democratic Committee. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Always good to have you. Short break, much more connections coming up next.